KILR, and we are celebrating Veterans Week, Veterans Day, falling on a Wednesday this year. Our special Veterans Week programming all week long on KILR is brought to you by Edward Jones, Doug Wagner, and Greta Farley, Drain Pro, Midwest Technology Services, the Esterville VFW Post 3388, North Star Bank and Agency, your regional wellness center, Bloom Leonard Agency, Southern Archery, State Line Cooperative, Maryland Strickland with Hoyne Realty, Cornerstone Insurance, Iowa Lakes Electric Cooperative, Bank Plus, and Scott Transfer and Storage. Joining us today for our special Veterans Week programming are Dan and Melissa Lutat. Both Dan and Melissa served in the United States Air Force. And first of all, Dan and Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I'll have you get up there close to the mic, just that way we can both hear you. But so my first question then, I know you're both soft-spoken, so but Dan, first let's start with you. What got you interested in the Air Force? Like, you know, why did you decide to go that route?
Well, like a lot of young kids, when you're trying to figure out what you want to do for life, you know, you get into your junior, senior year, and if you don't necessarily have a plan, but you really know you want to do something where you can work with your hands and quite frankly, work for a team that doesn't like to lose, for me, that was really my choice. I knew that I didn't want to go right into college, and I knew that in the Air Force, you know, I would have benefits to be able to do that. So for me, it was all about, you know, I want to do something exciting with my life, and I want to, you know, work with people that all have kind of the same sense of mission. So that's why I made the choice.
So how did that training go? What did you have to do to get prepared, I guess, for the Air Force?
Well, I was in athletics, so I was physically prepared. That really wasn't much of a challenge there. But, you know, it's a new way of doing things. You know, my family didn't have any history of military service other than my brother's. And, you know, so for me, going into a service that was different than theirs, I really didn't know what to expect. So there's a lot of unknowns, you know, and the first time away from home, you know, I came from a small town, and, you know, it was just one of those things where my eyes got open as I went along. You know, it's one of those things where you really get to understand why your parents always tell you, keep your mouth shut and keep your eyes and ears open.
And there you go. So what was the actual job title for you?
I started off as an aircraft electrician, and as the service downsized over the years, we were combined and merged with what we called environmental service. So, you know, basically as the Air Force evolved, our job changed from where we primarily worked on electrical systems themselves, power generation, control and warning. Nowadays, if you join the Air Force as an electrician, you're going to do everything from SATCOM to, you know, the steering systems on the airplane. So, you know, technology has allowed us to make a better technician, and, you know, by downsizing, you just learn to do things differently, so change becomes the norm.
But you also, as you promoted, talk a little bit about promotion.
Oh, well, well, yeah, and, you know, the Air Force is a lot like civilian life. It's been a corporate structure since the mid-70s. Okay. And so basically, you know, you're competing based on your knowledge level of the Air Force itself and its history, but also what we call specialty knowledge. So within your career field, you make rank based on how much you know, how much of an expert you are, because we like to cultivate leadership from within. And in order to do that, you got to have people that are kind of competing for those top spots. And so through the years, I had an opportunity in my career field to promote rather quickly. And, you know, that made a big difference for me because, you know, when I reached my 10th year in service, you know, I knew that I was going to stay in the long haul. So eventually, you get in, Melissa will talk about this a little bit too, but you get to the point where it's not a job and it's not an occupation. It just becomes a calling. It's really what you really want to do for the rest of your career. So,
and how many years did you end up serving, Dan?
I served 28.
And what years were they?
So I joined in 82 and I retired in 2010.
Okay, so actually just recently.
Right, and so we've been here ever since. I'm originally from the East Coast. I grew up in Massachusetts, but, you know, in a small town just like you have here in Iowa. So the change in life really wasn't anything different. But I knew I was coming home here, and Melissa is an Iowa girl, and she's the only one in her family that left home. So we knew this was gonna be our landing spot.
Well, Melissa, let's bring you in here. Why did you want to join the Air Force? What was your calling?
Ha! I didn't want to join the Air Force. In my senior year of high school, if you don't know my family, I am the youngest of 8 children, and 7 of them being females, and my brother Willie. But so, in my senior year of high school, my sister Kaylin, the matriarch of our family, said, "You have 2 choices. You can become a nurse." And I'm like, "I don't want to be a nurse. I don't want to be around sick people." That's, you know, you're thinking narrow-minded then. Mm-hmm. Or join the United States Air Force. And I'm like, "I can join the Air Force, serve for 20 years. I'm 18. That means I'll be 38 and I'll have a retirement for the rest of my life. Okay, I'll join the Air Force." And essentially, and of course, back then, if you can imagine it, we didn't have social media. There was no way to search it. There was no, you know, I didn't know anything about the Air Force other than I thought, well, I could go be a pilot. Well, there's a lot of opportunities in the Air Force. And guess what? Pilots are this very small percentage of what the Air Force really is about. So I served from 1987 until late 2008. So just 22 years.
Okay. And where were you stationed or where were you trained to get you ready?
So when you join the Air Force, everyone goes through basic training in San Antonio. So, and that's a 6-week indoctrination about history. Dan talked a little bit about that, but there's a lot of, it's about helping you understand what it means to be a member in the United States Air Force. It's also a screening process for the Air Force, because to serve in the Air Force, you know, you have to have a clean background. You have to have an aptitude to be able to learn and it's a progressive environment, meaning it's an up or out program, meaning we want you to continue to grow within your, not just in your aptitude, your capabilities, but also, you know, your education and your leadership abilities. So I knew from the day that I entered the Air Force that I was going to retire from the Air Force. And it was hard. It was terrible because I hated being away from my family, growing up in a very close-knit family. I cried a lot. My second duty location, my first one was in Norton Air Force Base in California. And just for the record, a young lady going to, you know, growing up here in Estherville, Iowa with a close-knit family and, you know, thinking the grass is going to be greener in California. I found out real quickly that that was not the lifestyle that I ever wanted. It was fun there. We explored. We've seen a lot of things. My family visited. But from there, I went to Komoso Air Station, Sicily, when we did after the Cold War. And I shipped out the ground launch cruise missiles out of there. I was in logistics. So we were deactivating a lot of our nukes over there, and I was shipping those out. That was my first experience with shipping out human remains.
Wow.
You know, I was 19 years old, and God, that's going to make me want to cry, especially after this weekend. But shipping out the human remains, and I, you know, you're there. That's something that needs to be done. And then I came back. I was at Offutt Air Force Base. We did the deactivation of SAC. So at that point, I was working with all the VIPs, shipping them off of General's Row. Moving their property, making arrangements for all their moving and the things that are necessary for that to happen when you do go through deactivation. And then that's when I was transferred down to Offutt Air Force Base in 1992 in transition and ready in preparation for the B-2 stealth bomber to come there. And so I was part of the welcoming team for that, and that's how Dan and I met. He actually was on the design phases of the B-2, was in California, and he came there, and I was in transportation at the time within logistics. And while we were doing the bed down of the B-2 and preparing for the actual arrival of the aircraft, and he came there as a technician or aircraft mechanic for that and led the team to prepare our base for the actual arrival of the B-2 in December of 1993. And then we worked as quality advisors together as we went through transformation of the Air Force transformation and, you know, looking at the way the Air Force does business and improving the things that we do, looking at process flow mapping, all this type of things that make us be better. And from there, we went down to Maxwell, and we were at Maxwell Air Force Base. Dan was an instructor for the Senior NCO Academy. He was the only Master Sergeant. He'd actually found out why he was there. He's got a line number for a Senior Master Sergeant. And very quick promotions for him. And we watched on the news over the weekend as we went to war with, in support of Albania. And we knew that more than likely I was going to be deployed again. And by Monday, no news. But Tuesday, I was informed that I was shipping out for 180 days, undisclosed location. I arrived in Germany. They issued me a weapon. That was the first time I'd ever actually been issued a weapon while I was served in the Air Force. And I was like, this is scary. Called home bawling. Thinking, oh my goodness, I thought I was telling my family goodbye. And that was, and you know, by that time we had several children. Dan and I have 8 children. That was in 1999, and he came over to, we met Germany at the end of the Allied force, and he came over, was able to visit for a week before I was able to return home. I had just a few more things I had to ship out of there. Where I was shipping out the bombs for the A-10 and the F-117s, and I came home pregnant with Faith. And then I transitioned in to become a recruiter for the United States Air Force in 2000. And I still stay, I've recruited 402 people in the United States Air Force, and I stay in contact with all my very good, you know, I'm very proud of everything that they've accomplished. And 2004, Dan left for Korea for a 1-year remote tour. And he left in January 6th, and by the end of January, Faith had been hospitalized with kidney problems. Lucretia had found out she had scoliosis, and we were going to have major back surgery. And I found out I was pregnant with her, with Gracie. And Dan returned home. I was 9 months pregnant and 2 days from delivery, and he made it home in time for her to arrive, and he returned back to Korea to finish its 1-year remote tour. So he returned until January. He was able to be home for just over a couple weeks. And during that time, I transitioned from California and dropped my kids off in South Dakota with my sister, and headed down to Alabama for a few months, and returned back to Nebraska, bought a house, had our stuff delivered, and then Dan came home. I had a baby, and it was.
It's nonstop, and you know, without an extended family to help, it doesn't go very well. You know, and there's a very small percentage of people that are dual active duty military to begin with, and that's the reason why. You know, it's kind of a struggle. You're always working to try to make sure that your family's taken care of. And, you know, when one deploys, you know, people think, well, you know, that person's got the worst end of the deal. But things happen back home, you know. So that year that I was in Korea, she did a lot by herself. And, you know, so, you know, anytime we think of veterans and stuff like that, you got to think of their families, too, because the folks at home are fighting those battles every day. And, you know, when I was in Korea, when Faith got sick, I couldn't come home for that. You know, so you kind of feel a little helpless there. But, you know, technology, thankfully, by that time had made the world a very small place. So typically every day when I came back to my room for lunch, you know, they were getting ready to put the kids to bed. So, you know, I could have a conversation with them face to face, and that helps.
And that's an interesting point you bring up, too, because, you know, you're away from your family, Dan, during this time. Alyssa's away from you, but she has the kids. But given both of your guys' perspective on that, how hard was that to go through with your tour over a year span? How hard was that in both of your perspectives?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I think from my perspective, you know, it's... You know, you lose yourself in your work. So, you know, you try to be as productive as you can to take your mind off things. But still, you know, she had to find a new way of doing things, you know, and that's the way it was, you know. So for her, I think it was a lot tougher. You know, she had been selected for a new assignment, you know, walked into an assignment where military image is a really big deal, and she showed
and
up on
their doorstep.
And I was
9 months pregnant. They about fainted. I told them, if you think you're surprised, you should have been me. But yeah, so, you know what? He had to do it as well. I was deployed often, as I updated. And just for the record, you know, you watch people and, you know, you think, oh, they're just exaggerating, wanting to kiss the ground when they arrive back in the United States. Yeah. I can tell you, for somebody that was over... Wow, why am I crying? For somebody who is over in an environment where they don't love Americans, and they certainly didn't love this outspoken Iowan that showed up, that was leading a group of young men that depended on her. You know, that's their culture. You can't blame them. That's what, and we were trained on their culture. But at the same time, I'm trained to be a leader. Mm-hmm. It was my job to see us through in the safest way possible. But when I arrived home, every time I'd come back from the Middle East, when I'd touch ground in the United States, you just want to drop to your knees and just hug it. And you just want to, you're so thankful for God and that you made it home safe. And that feeling is overwhelming. So on Veterans Day, when you're thinking about the service and the sacrifice, those are tough being over there, but the best way to show appreciation is that is love your country. Mm-hmm. You know, people are like, if they don't want to stand for the flag, to me, that's hurtful. I'm going to tell you straight up, that hurts me. When I was in Saudi Arabia, that was when we shipped out. That was when the Riyadh bombing happened. And I shipped out 9 trays of human remains and 1 tray of human parts. And that probably was when you realized how dangerous it really was. And you do not want them on American soil. You do not. And... you know, they proved that they can get to us through 9/11. They proved that they could get to us in the earlier bombings. And that stuff's real. And when you see it, when I was stationed in Saudi, I don't remember what year it was, but I'd have to go look at my records. But, you know, oftentimes we'd have to take cover. And most of the time, you know, we have some pretty good defense mechanisms. But there was a couple of times where the missiles had made it in. And when I was at Cobart Towers, what's that base? PSAP, Dan?
Prince Sultan.
Yeah, so my clamshell, or where I was stationed, was right off the flight line there. And, of course, the bunkers are spread, I don't know, maybe 5 miles apart. And it hit the French bunker where they had their aircraft. And, you know, when you go over there and you see the destruction of what that bomb did that was so close to where you were at, and you're just like, oh my gosh. But I was never in the Marine Corps, I was never in the Army. Those folks are a lot closer to that stuff than I ever was. So I can't imagine what they felt in them situations. And I am thankful. I've listened to many of their stories, and serving in the Air Force was a blessing to me, but still it had its moments for sure.
We're speaking with Dan and Melissa Lutat, both served in the United States Air Force. Last question for both of you guys. Start with you, Dan. Given that we're in a world full of divisiveness, you could say, right now, you know, we just went through an election, and just a lot of people speak their minds on politics. But when it comes to remembering Veterans Day on a Wednesday this week, what would you tell people about just what these veterans mean to you personally? What does being a veteran mean to you?
Well, for me, it means that you've had an opportunity to keep something that we don't really have much experience with being taken away. I can tell you, growing up in New England, we had that drilled in our heads. You know, there are 200 years of history. And you have to appreciate that there are places around the world where they don't have the freedoms that we enjoy. And we have, you know, a republic that's, you know, withstood being divided many times before. And to have a part in keeping that intact and making sure that our liberties, you know, whether you like them or not, doesn't really matter. The bottom line is we have freedoms that other countries don't. And being able to preserve that to me is important. And, you know, when you think about what veterans do, you think about Marines and the Army, Navy, all those folks. You know, I mean, these are ordinary people that have a way of doing some extraordinary things. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, yes, there were times when we go into harm's way, but 90% of our time is spent doing humanitarian work. Mm-hmm. And those are things that we do extremely well. So, you know, while there are those times where you look back and you say, wow, you know, that was a really close call, at the same time, you have a lot of good memories because most of it is spent helping other people. And I think that's the biggest thing. So, you know, if you know a veteran or you know somebody who's a family of a deployed veteran, whether they're active duty, guard, or reserve, doesn't matter. We all look the same these days, and we're all embedded with each other. Bottom line is, you know, thank them. Because if you ever have your freedom taken away, it's going to mean something to you. You know, and we don't ever want to see that again. So that's something that's part of the fabric of the United States, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, I'm proud of the things I was able to do, but more than anything, fortunate for the experience to be able to work with some really, really capable people with a real strong sense of mission and a really strong love for their country.
Melissa, same question to you. What does it mean? What would you maybe tell people about your service, you know, and maybe give them a little bit of appreciation on what you did for the United States of America? What does that mean to you?
Oh, that's a deep question. You know, oftentimes when I would talk to the younger people, I had the opportunity at the end of my career to be the commandant for the James M. McCoy Airman Leadership School. And I'd have 100 students there, and it was their opportunity, it's their transition into the supervisory level. And when I talked to them, all of them doing different jobs within the Air Force, it's a privilege to wear the uniform. It truly is, and it's not a right. You have to earn that privilege. And at some point in my Air Force career, I say it turned Air Force blue, but maybe you could say it turned red, white, and blue. It is an opportunity to give to everybody the knowledge that those airplanes that are flying over your head are our airplanes. Mm-hmm. They're our safety. Those ships at sea, they can't beat our Navy. Our Army and our Marine Corps are so well trained and so well equipped. You know that our safety is something that those people have put their lives on the line and gave for that for a reason. And when you see, you know, there's a lot, most of us come back okay, health-wise. We're not in a casket. We're not draped in a flag. But there's always a piece of you that's changed, that appreciates and knows that our freedoms do not come without sacrifices, and a lot of sacrifices. In our case, most often it was our kids that bore the brunt of that. Our family at home that were taking care of our family because we were not there to be able to do that. But going out and enjoying your freedom and appreciating the fact that you have the opportunity to vote for who you want to do the things that you want to without destruction, without rioting and all this other stuff, that's unnecessary. You can make a difference by doing good. Dan and I came home, although we don't wear the uniform anymore, we certainly do try to do as much as we can for our community. We're honored to be here and thankful for being here, and we certainly are honored to take that and be part of Iowa Lakes and influence the students that we have every day. And hopefully you know, having that impact within our community and our leadership there at Iowa Lakes as well. But to all the veterans out there, on behalf of my family, Dan and I, we certainly want to tell them thank you for their service, whether it was a year, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, whatever it was. That's made a difference in our world. And because of the people just like them, we're able to sit here and have these conversations with you. But thank you for having us today, too.
You bet. Dan and Melissa, we appreciate your service as always. And, you know, it takes a lot for someone to do the stuff that you guys have done.
I agree.
And just everybody in general that has done that. I'm one that can't say that I don't think I would be able to do it. Maybe. It just depends on that certain drive, but, you know, I'm fortunate that you guys are back home safe, and I really do appreciate your service. So thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Nathan.
Melissa and Dan Lutab both served on the United States Air Force, and we greatly appreciate their service. Veterans Week programming all week long.